like recording talking.
Oh, okay. That's okay. What are you recording for?
Well, I'm recording for my, so what my project is right now is, or maybe I'll just show you.
Everything that was taken from us.
Because our families, they just, when they were in the schools, they just got shot down for asking things, or they got in trouble, they got like beat for that. So now that old way is like all misconstrued. It's all like, there's like a hurt around it, you know, so it's hard. It's like people react in the same way sometimes when you ask too many questions. They react like those nuns did.
Hello, you are listening to Unceded Airwaves on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Musqueam people here at CITR. My name is Sage, and I'm joined with
Tiana.
Carmela.
Carmela is a guest tonight. We heard her voice last week when we premiered slash aired the Indigenous Brilliance podcast episode, and we're happy to have her back. This episode was inspired by an off-air conversation that we had, Carmela and I, during that that episode about mixed identities. And the whole time I was like, you have to come back, you have to come back, you have to come back. So we're here tonight. We're super excited to have this conversation, learn more about Carmela, about Tiana, myself. We're just going to have a good time. That intro song is Stone Woman by It's You, a local artist. So I'll start off by just introducing myself and then we can all introduce ourselves. Cool. So my name is Sage. I am mixed in two ways. So I was born in Edmonton, Alberta, in Treaty 8 territory, where my family, my paternal family, is from. Saw Ridge Cree territory. There, my mother is a English immigrant. She's English Irish, and I was born in Edmonton, but she quickly moved me out to the coast. So I grew up on unceded Coast Salish territory as an uninvited guest, and I now live, work, love, play, dance. I don't know, laugh on unceded Musqueam territory here in Vancouver.
Cool. So my name's Tiana. I'm Anishinaabe from Wabasmung First Nation in Treaty 3 territory, which is in northwestern Ontario. I grew up off reserve in a neighboring community called Kenora. So I'm Anishinaabe on my father's side, and then my mom is a mixture of a bit of everything, but she's a white settler. So I grew up, lived Kenora for most of my life until I moved out here.
Cool. I'm Carmela. My people come from Brazil, linking back to Africa through the transatlantic slave trade on my mom's side. And on my dad's side, we're Mistawasis Cree. And the other day I was talking to my dad, kind of asking more about our people because I didn't grow up with him or any of our family. And he's like, yeah, I don't know much about our family, but my mom's mom or something was white. And I'm like, cool, so I guess I'm partially white too. That's good to know. So I guess my identity has been ever-changing. I grew up in foster care with my grandma, who's of white settler ancestry. I kind of see myself as walking in three worlds in that sense. Yeah.
Word. Wow, I'm so excited to have this conversation. I call it the in-between.
We love the in-between. Liminal space.
Liminal spaces. So, Carmela, just to, like, orient you in this space, tell us about Indigenous Brilliance, sort of your involvement there, how you function in Vancouver, and then we can get more in-depth.
Yeah. So, Indigenous Brilliance is a literary collective partnered with Massey Books and Rue Magazine. So it includes Yonina, Patricia Massey, Jessica Johns, Jay Simpson, Emily Dundas Oak, and myself. all of us are Indigenous from different places across Turtle Island. And our collective is grounded in celebrating the voices of Indigenous, Two-Spirit, queer, female-identifying folks and their creativity. So it started off as a reading series, and now it's become kind of, I don't know, it's brought in other forms of art like music and film and different forms of storytelling. So we do quarterly reading series at Massey Books. And then we were also part of Growing Room Festival, which unfortunately was canceled today. But I think we're hoping that it's just going to be rescheduled and that a lot of the amazing artists that were planned to be a part of the Indigenous Brilliance full day event will still be heard and celebrated in future. Yeah.
Word. Yeah, very sad to get that email, all the notifications.
Yeah.
But we look forward to seeing, I mean, Indigenous Brilliance is doing great stuff all around the city all the time. So we have much to look forward to. I want to ask like a couple specific questions about your creativity in the city. I know that you mentioned that you're starting a like film project.
Yes.
I would love if you could tell us about that.
Yeah. So last summer, my friend Lexi and I did a collaborative performance art piece with Vines Art Festival. And through that, we kind of explored the relationship between music, which is one of my forms of creativity, and dance and performance art, which is what Lexi focuses on. So basically, I asked her to kind of translate my music into movement, which was a really, really cool process. And we've been talking a lot in the last year about our identities as Black people in Vancouver. What does that mean? How does that feel? How does that impact the way that we move through space? And so we decided that we wanted to do a movement film, kind of centered around that topic of discussion, as well as doing a documentary film, so talking to a lot of different people, Black people in Vancouver, about their experience being Black in Vancouver. So it's going to look like a documentary film shot cinema verte, which is like, you know that the filmmaker is behind the camera, so it's like the person that we're interviewing could be talking to me and I'm holding the camera, you know what I mean? Yeah, so like breaking down that barrier, super casual. And we've interviewed 5 people so far, I think. And we're looking to kind of blend those interviews, words from those interviews, into a dance piece as well that will be, so it's all going to be one film. But using different mediums to speak to that experience of being Black in Vancouver. And so far, it's been really cool, the different people that we've met and been able to talk to. And I guess just really reaffirming the fact that anti-Blackness does exist in this city, but it's experienced differently by every single person. And as well that every person we've interviewed identifies as Black, and we are all so, so different. So we're hoping that that is also conveyed through this film, like the diversity of Blackness. I guess we just want to celebrate that.
I'm so excited to see this film.
Yeah.
Like every time you talk about it, I'm so excited. excuse me. I know you were mentioning that you've obviously had a lot of inspiration. There's been a lot of thought and care put into this film. But you were mentioning a song that has inspired the film. Do you mind maybe introing it and we'll play it before we get into a larger discussion?
Yeah, so the song is by Sampa the Great and it's called Final Form.
What reactions did you have to it? Like, how did it inspire
the... The song, I think, is one of many that has kind of... it feels like a celebration of Blackness and of, like, reclaiming that identity, and so it's like a real jam. Yeah.
Word. Cool. Okay, so here's Final Form by Sampa the Great. Is that
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah. with grace, baby. I can't afford to cover the course. Of course, maybe settle that one in court. Cause judging by the basics, y'all already comfortable, stuck up in the matrix. Shit is basic, patch credentials. But understand your favorite rapper, peep my gold potential. I'm out of shame, been passive, trying to fit the circle cause I don't know how to act shit. Half of y'all was steady, insecure, don't try to backflip. Just because the seasoning and flow's already active. Only 4 years, fantastic, young veteran, new classic. Nah, knock the walls off, fuck the whole key, we gon' hinge the whole door off. I'm still AD, never forget it, it's life after death, roll the credits.
I hate to say my feelings for you still exist.
Credit my maker, take a trip to see Jamaica, Molly spirit with the vapor, back design, that's the nature. Africa, the new America, I hope I earn this permanent. And this, I put my pen in it, got my land and my permit with it. Bone on my bone, flesh off my flesh. Witness in me, you can't make me feel less. Let's hold, I'm not impressed. Best mode, got my afro like an empress. Great state I'm in all states I'm in. I might find a form in my melanin. Great state I'm in all states I'm in. I might find a form in my melanin. Great state I'm in all states I'm in. I might find a form in my melanin. Great state I'm in all states I'm in. I might find a form in my melanin. First name Eve, somebody ate the food they told the great to never eat. I'm dripping, DNA sees like I'm born gray. I be mad 2 G's, third world in it, first world I dated. No mentor, all my heroes assassinated. We been here, reincarnated. Tryna finish what they started and we made it. Great state I'm in all states I'm in. I might find a form in my melanin. Great state I'm in all states I'm in. I might find a form in my melanin. Great state I'm in all states I'm in. I might find a form in my melanin. Great state I'm in all states I'm in. I might find a form in my melanin.
Ta-ta!
Now the patriarchy is dead, and we killed it. If you identify as a woman, femme, trans, or non-binary, CITR wants you on the air. You can talk about literally whatever you want as long as you care about it. No worries if you have no experience, we'll train you in everything you need to know. Come by CITR and say hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Hello.
From 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday to help us never play Led Zeppelin on CITR 101.9 FM ever again. I could be you.
Woo! Okay, such a bop.
True, right?
Such
yeah.
a bop.
Yeah.
I'm always a big fan of anything funky.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little funky.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Okay, so the last time we were having this conversation, and Tiana, you and I have had this conversation often as well, with mixed identities, often there's this, like, feeling of in-between,
mm-hmm.
But you're often, you know, like, too much of something in one room and not enough of another in another room, and there's sort of this, like, dancing back and forth and sort of, like, navigating that limbo space,
mm-hmm.
Something that I think about a lot, but I'm wondering what your guys' experiences are with that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to start?
Yeah. So I feel for, like, all kind of racialized people, we're always in contrast to whiteness.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that deeply. So, like, growing up, a lot of the time I found myself in predominantly white spaces. So that kind of shaped how I view myself in that way, because you're always never going to be in that, included in that. So it's always like an outside kind of looking in. Mm-hmm. But like in relation to other Indigenous people growing up, I grew up with like my cousins who are also mixed. So I feel like we all kind of just felt very included within our own kind of group. And we never had that feeling of like not being included until we kind of exited outside of our intimate spaces. But it was always a very known thing that you were in contrast to whiteness. I think it's very specific to Northwestern Ontario, where it is very kind of you're white or you're brown. That's like that's a very common theme. So and it's like a hard line that people make, I feel like, just in the racism of a rural town is very different than we'd experience in an urban center.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, this past summer I took a sociology course where I learned about double consciousness, and that term, when it was explained to me, I was like, whoa, that is what I've been experiencing my entire life, which is like...
What is double consciousness?
Yeah, so it's a term created by W.E.B. Du Bois, and it basically is describing this experience of Black people, but I think that it does translate to the experience of any person of color living in a settler colonial state that is white dominated. So it's that we are always being perceived by white people and compared to whiteness. And that double consciousness is being aware of ourselves as who we are, but also ourselves as we're being seen by other people. So we're always being perceived and always thinking about how we're being received by other people. Yeah, and I really identify with that. I think in any space that I'm in, whether it's a space that's identified as a safe space for Black and Indigenous people or not, I'm always thinking about how am I being received based on the way that I look, based on my cultural history, based on the way that I was brought up, the way that I articulate myself, all of these things. It's like always going through my mind is how am I communicating to other people and how might they be receiving that? And I think like code switching also applies here, and making yourself as malleable as possible to the different groups that we're interacting with. It's like this chameleon skill that can be really useful, and I like to think of it as a gift and a responsibility for translation between different groups, but it can also be really exhausting and painful and confusing. Yeah, so it's complicated, I guess.
Huge. Yeah, huge. Yeah, I think we talked about this last time, but I think for me, like, movement was really involved in, like, my feelings, because I had a very clear distinction of where I was spatially within my identities.
Mm-hmm.
Because my Indigenous family was in Edmonton, I would go and spend, like, 3 weeks or a month with them, and I was always the white cousin. And so I would be, like, Irish jigging with my brown cousins who were, like, traditionally dancing, and feeling like I was in my family for sure, but very aware of my space within that environment. Mm-hmm. And then I would fly back to Victoria and be in my suburban, you know, area, and I would assume this sort of like racially ambiguous person in my very white high school, and I was passable in some ways but like easily tokenized in others.
Mm-hmm.
And especially like in Canada, the like indigeneity is so easily called on, or and especially as like a high school student, I didn't really understand how to say no.
Right.
Or like what my boundaries were. Like I remember in elementary or middle school or something, my mom got an email that I was going to get an award. And I was like, okay, they're finally recognizing my incredible intelligence. And so I showed up to this like packed gym. All of my friends, their families were all there. I like dragged my mom with me, and I was like, okay, like I don't know what award I'm going to get. And like all the academic awards go, all the sports awards go, like all these things go up, and they're all going up in groups. They're like, you know, all these kids. And they're like, and now the Aboriginal Excellence Award.
Right.
And they call my name, and as a 13 year old, I was just like, no, like, mm-hmm. you guys pulled me in here and didn't tell me that I was getting given an award for my identity. Like, you really,
excellent native.
Yeah, I was like, yo, I talked about smudging one goddamn time.
Excellence.
I was like, that's really kind of messed up if, like, uh-huh. I want to, like, practice my culture, talk about my culture, my identity in a classroom, and suddenly I have to be, like recognized for being different. Yeah. I was talking to Tiana about this before we started chatting, was, like, I think being mixed, you often start to identify with the differences in your life, and, like, mm. you enter a room and you, like, or you, like, meet someone, you identify differences, and I'm trying to train my brain not to do that.
It's hard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is also, I guess, when we think about our relationship to whiteness, like, I was raised in a white household, and that changes, like, my ability to communicate with white people and to understand white people and to navigate, like, white dominant spaces. And I think that does make me, I guess, a better candidate for being tokenized, you know? It's like the palpable, acceptable Black, Indigenous person of color. And also usually Black or Indigenous, never acknowledged as both, you know?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
You're never a whole person.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That is, thank you.
You're welcome. We're whole people.
We're whole people. Yeah, it is weird because I feel like tokenization, yeah, it's always like we want this part of you, but please just refer to that part and, like, speak as if you know everything about that part of you.
Yeah, and that makes, like, I don't know, speaking from my personal experience, it makes identity formation really confusing because when people are calling on you for these things that they acknowledge as excellence, but it's just one part of you, you know, I never really wanted to say no to that. It's like, well, thank you for seeing me. Even if you don't see all of me, I'll take it. Thanks so much. But then you neglect a lot of other parts of yourself. So it's like a very fragmented existence a lot of the time.
Word.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sometimes think about that because I think there are, like, a lot of opportunities, certainly in, like, the changing time and the effort for people to recognize, especially Indigenous people in, and, like, people of color, and, like, you know, there's, like, a whole movement for intersectionality, like, across mm-hmm. Across the board, which is fantastic, but that doesn't come without interrogation, I think. Like, mm-hmm. I think even when I see that, those kind of opportunities, and or I find myself in positions, I have to, like, wonder, what am I doing here? What is it that people are asking of me by being mm-hmm. here? What am I representing? Am I representing, like, a label, or am I representing myself as an individual and, like, what I bring mm-hmm. to an environment?
Yeah. I guess with intersectionality as well, it kind of feels like there's no winning because sometimes you can be, I don't know, I find myself being, like, invited into spaces that really acknowledge my intersections. But that's, like, the thing that they're seeing is, like, wow, you are oppressed in so many ways. Tell us about it. Speak to that. Or you're so resilient and strong. Blah, blah, blah. And it's, like, underneath all that is just a person. Mm-hmm. Can you just see that?
So where do we feel like people instead of talking about when we don't?
Right? Mm.
Yeah. So who do
love
you feel
that
whole?
Movement.
Yeah. What fills you?
Okay. I'm going to say we're going to take a brief break. We're going to think about this and come back. Leave you on a sort of sad cliff note, and then we'll come back. I am going to play a personal favorite, Tribe Called Red.
Nice. We love.
And this one is also personal, Northern Cree Redskin Girl.
Okay.
Just patting myself.
Okay, Crees.
All right. That Cree energy. Tiana can't handle it.
So many chaotic Crees. Cree behind every tree.
All right, here's a tune.
I've never heard that before.
And we're back.
Hey.
Do you want to ask your question again, Tiana?
Oh, right. So when do we feel like whole people? When do we feel really good just being whoever we are, whenever we are that person?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to make that experience like more like in many places.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get to the point where I don't notice when I'm feeling good.
Oh,
like it's just sort of a state
right.
that I can be in. But we were talking about this during the break, and we've had conversations each separately about like a process called worlding. I might get a little bit theoretical here for a second, but there's a theory in queer theory, but also more and more in Indigenous theory as well, and Indigenous writers and Indigenous queer writers, my favorite kind of writers. But this idea of like being able to like generate space and generate feelings and generate positive feelings. And so I think like, especially with identity, I'm trying to actively bridge parts of my identity. So the Indigenous and the white and the Edmonton and the BC and those kind of things, and just recognize that those parts of myself might not be together in the world. There might not be a place in the world where those things come together, but they do come together in me, which is super kind of like touchy-feely, but I think that sometimes that is necessary. And I think like I certainly feel the most comfortable when I'm with like my chosen family or the people that like know and accept both parts of me, or maybe don't know either side too well, but they know the person that they interact with every day. And when I'm in spaces where I can dance with my friends at like a fun warehouse party, or cook dinner with my friends in my apartment, like in those moments I'm not thinking about how I'm performing or whether or not I'm too Indigenous or not Indigenous enough or I'm whitewashed or whatever. Like those things don't even cross my mind because I'm just myself. And I think that actually when I'm like the happiest and when I'm the most at home, I recognize it in other people, like how other people make me feel and like what spaces are created by me and like the people that I'm relational with, if you will. Yeah. How about you guys?
I feel like that's just a common theme, is like relationships and how you kind of navigate them. I know like within this collective, we have like such a great crew of queer Indigenous people, and we're all just vibing all the time. We're just feeling. But yeah, that's something that like I think the way settler colonialism and like the structures that kind of tell us that we're two separate people, and how that like manifests in our relationships and how we see ourselves is something that we have to like, I know it's something that I'm constantly trying to interrogate, and how I move through space, and how there are certain privileges in being like having lighter skin, and there's also ways that you're being read that you have no control of that are also negative.
Yeah.
So in being with your friends, there's also that like safety where you're kind of, you just get to be your own self, and that's always nice. It always feels good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for myself, I have been working in the past like 3 or 4 years a lot on my spirituality, and that is where I've been able to bring all parts of myself into a healing space. And I guess kind of like what you're saying, maybe externally there's nowhere that fully accurately can represent the nuances and complexities of like who we are as people, but I think like through our spiritual practices, that is where there's space for it and where it can all be seen. So for myself, like where I feel the most whole and where I feel the most happy is when my spirit feels like safe and where my spirit feels like free, I guess. And at this point for myself, I think that's usually when I'm alone, actually.
That's fair.
Yeah.
We love that.
I'm so on board.
Right? Yeah. And I kind of see it as like I have to keep coming back to myself and doing these practices that draw on all different aspects of my culture using different medicines. Like I'll use sage and I'll use sweetgrass, tobacco, cedar. I'll pray to creator and I'll smudge, but I'm also like praying to deities and I'm speaking to my ancestors, and that is a space where I feel like all of myself can just exist and there's nothing wrong with it and no one's questioning it, and it's like that's my space. And goals is to be able to walk in the world and like carry that with me everywhere I go, but sometimes I lose it. I think it's a very distracting world out there and there's a lot of things that can like pull myself away from me, but yeah, I'm trying to like bring that spirit with me everywhere I go. And I agree, like when I am with my friends who I feel like really do see my spirit, that is where I feel whole and where I feel joyful with other people. Yeah, and I guess that's what community is just trying to find and build spaces where we can just be ourselves fully, right?
Mm-hmm. I think like what you were saying though is like so important about like strengthening the relationship you have with your own identity and like mm-hmm. with your own self. I think I was talking about this, but my paper that I'm writing. but I think like it. I mean, growing up as a term, just as sort of a hellscape. but I think like certainly everyone has their sort of like challenges. But I think like a couple of mine have been identity, like both. I guess racial and like also like coming out and like navigating those like intersectionalities between queer and indigenous, and taking the space to like delve into your own uncertainties, because it's a scary thing to be uncertain about the world, but it's a whole other thing to be uncertain about yourself.
Yeah.
And so I think like that being alone piece I think is so important. Like I spend so much time. Spirituality I could probably work on, but I spend so much time just like writing about my thoughts and feelings, mm-hmm. and yeah. like thinking about my thoughts and feelings and like listening to music and dancing alone and cooking alone and like really interrogating how I feel like in myself and my how I relate to the world is so important. And it feels a little bit self-indulgent, but it also feels so important, like
mm-hmm.
it just like giving myself space to do that has strengthened the way that I like exist in the world.
Yeah, in exactly. general. Yeah. I think it's hard to move past that feeling of, I guess like guilt is something I experience when I'm spending all of this time like healing myself and, using medicines like for myself. I'm like, but why am I not giving to other people, or why am I not participating in community? But it's like, we really need to make sure that like we are feeling full before we're giving out to other people. Yeah, and I guess like just reminding ourselves that it's okay to do that and to prioritize ourselves in that way. And even when we're like cooking or dancing or whatever at home, it's like that ceremony too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Go see.
Shut up.
Tell me about your paper.
Stop.
I want it.
I'm going to allow myself like a minute to talk about this. Not even like 25 seconds. I think it's crazy, like actually how helpful the institution of university has been in like mm-hmm. establishing my identity, mostly because it's challenged me at every single step of the way. Like when I first got to UBC, I was too scared to go into the Longhouse. I was like, I'm not Indigenous enough to be in there. But then I felt really uncomfortable in colonial classrooms that were asking me about the Indian Act. And I was like fresh out of high school with no wherewithal of what was going on. And I feel like I'm graduating this year and I've finally written something that I'm proud of. And part of what I'm proud of is that I was able to like pull myself out of me. Ew. I don't know how to put this properly. I was able to put myself into the paper is what I'm saying.
There we go.
There
that
it is.
Really. Oh, God. And I think, I don't know too. It's in the works, but it's. I think it's a big thing is just like really embracing the uncertainty of like my identity and like what like, I think society and, like, the society that we live in creates these pockets of uncertainty, but within those pockets of uncertainty, there are, like, millions of people mm-hmm. that, like, are just given this sort of, like, no-name brand. Like, we're not sure. And there's so many of those, like, cracks and crevices that people can fall into. Mm-hmm. And every crack and crevice is different, but I think, like, just kind of, like, deep diving into mine and, like, looking at queer and Indigenous theory and looking at, like, worlding and stuff has been so exciting. And, like, I think maybe you can relate with the film is just being able to interrogate those parts of yourself
right.
in a structural way and, like, mm-hmm. in a productive and creative but also really intelligent way.
Right? And then to be able to communicate that to other people, and it's, like, how that's received isn't that's not your responsibility, really, but
totally.
That you did that work. And I think these forms and mediums of self-interrogation are what hold us accountable to seeing these things through, because it's a really hard process. Mm-hmm. It's something that a lot of people go their entire lives without doing. But I think that it's really, really important for us to be doing that work, especially as people who do fall into these cracks. Our voices are important. It's hard, at least for me, to remember that sometimes. But yeah, I can't wait to read your paper.
Thanks, Carmela.
Yeah.
Shall we play another song?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we didn't plan this part. Okay. I'm gonna do a little Leanne Simpson. Under Your Always Light. I think it's spoken word. We shall see how far we get into it.
Okay.
Cool. Niche queen. And let's do it. Light.
God. Ugh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Ugh. Everybody. God, this is awful. Isn't there
anything?
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 Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
And we're back.
I'm really sorry about that transition, by the way.
Worst transition.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Real vibe switch.
Yeah, big, switch. Big.
Yeah. My audio tech is lacking.
I have whiplash from that. Sorry. Anyways, we're back. We were just talking in the break about children.
Let's talk about kids.
Yes.
Favorite topic? I have big auntie energy.
You do? Yeah. Like the best. Like the bougie aunt.
Ooh, thank you.
Yeah.
Fun aunt.
Yeah, the bougie fun aunt.
Nice.
I was thinking the other day, I'm like, I think I'm an uncle.
I love uncle vibes.
Yeah. Ooh. I know.
That's
I
pretty
know,
good.
Right? I'm like stepping into it. I'm like, I can do that.
You just have to like start balding and like.
What kind of uncles do you have?
Honestly, I don't even have bald uncles, but I just feel something.
Well, recently I've been talking about like the 90s Adam Beach, but I feel like you could be the like 90s Adam Beach hot uncle.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was shopping for vests yesterday, actually.
Oh, very, very uncle vibe.
Ooh.
Big uncle. Very uncle.
Yeah.
You need the beaded vest. Real with the uncle. Tassels. Ooh. Yes.
Yeah.
Keep going.
No, I got really into vests. I think this should have been a like dead giveaway, but I got really into vests when I was like, I think that they were in, from what I remember they were in, but I got into like suit vests. Ooh, and I would just like hot. Wear them with like t-shirts.
Yes.
Like really unfortunate look. Anyway.
She's gay.
Maybe.
There was many signs.
I was like, yeah, I don't know what's going on. I just love vests.
Love vests. No boys. Sorry.
And I was like, fellas? Am I? Okay, mixed identities. Get back on track, Tiana. Right.
Children.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, children and mixed identities.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, complicated. I am a child. I was once a child.
Of mixed a mixed
identity.
With
mixed identity.
Currently still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what about them?
Like, how do you feel? Are you having children? Do you think about them?
I don't know.
Do you dream about them?
Do I dream about my mixed identity kids? Maybe. Well, I think it's like a complicated question. When you're queer,
because
it's not as like straightforward, and I think you have to like give a lot more care and attention. I don't know if I have ever given enough attention to like the identities of my kid. I often think about like how I would like present my identity with children, or like how me and my partner would present our identities, and like how to incorporate culture into a home.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think like as someone who grew up outside of my culture. It was sort of like whiplash, going like to my family that like practice culture and where I could like experience my culture, and then coming back into a home that didn't have that. So I think like in terms of children, I think of like the environment that maybe children would be in, would be like a home with where mm-hmm. I would have to like actively think about my culture, and then certainly like my partner, how would they have. Would they have practices that they wanted to incorporate? How would they mix or meld with mine? Yeah, that's my answer.
That's fair. I think for me, because I'm the oldest of a very large and young family, so the concept of children and like raising children is a very real reality for me currently. Like I just have a baby brother who was born in January.
Lennon.
Yes.
Baby Lennon. He's so cute sweet. And so hairy.
Oh, yes. So cute. So I think the process of like me also growing up in a home that didn't really have culture, because my parents were young, and on my father's side, his mother was in residential school. So then we have the impacts of that into generational trauma. Mm-hmm. But in relation to culture, that's something that I've been working on bringing in not only my life, but like also the lives of my siblings. And kind of that's kind of shaping outward and how I hope to raise children within whatever partnerships I have mm-hmm. currently.
Yeah, I guess I kind of think of myself as a child in many ways still.
We're raising me.
Literally, though, like I am raising myself and I'm like teaching myself the culture. And it's like a lot of it is work that I have to do on my own. And even like moving through the resentment and anger for the fact that this is my responsibility is something that's taken like a lot of years.
I feel that.
Right?
Yes.
Fuck, I have to do this. Shit. Yeah, but for me, having kids is something that until I feel like I've done the work that I need to do with myself and raising myself, I don't think I would feel comfortable having children. I can be an uncle, though.
With a cool vest.
You know? Yeah. But then eventually, like, thinking into the far future, I would love to have kids and I would love to raise them with multiple caregivers, like, not even just, like, a two-parent household. I talk mm-hmm. to my friends a lot about this and wanting to raise kids together, right? Like, isn't that the most beautiful way this in community?
This is Tiana's agenda. Like,
Okay, yeah. No, so this is a thing. Sage has not bought in yet, but yeah. I'm not losing...
Tell me about
like,
it.
I'm not losing hope for her.
Okay.
She's going to want to live in the bush with us.
Yeah.
But the rest of the crew I have, like, gathered.
You've
and
got
we
it.
Have... We're like, okay, we're all going to live communally. We're just going to have kids. They're just all going to be our kids.
Yeah.
We're just going to raise children. And we'll just, like, ebb and flow. We'll just vibe. And it'll be great.
Right?
Me, notably very chill, very ebb and flow.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
The in-between. Embrace the in-between with us.
That's so beautiful, though. I feel like a lot of my friends who identify as queer also identify as people who want to live futures in this way, which is collectively. And then when we think about kids and raising kids, it's like that's something that we also want to do collectively. I don't think that it should be just the responsibility of two people. It's like there's so much more room for diversity of, I guess, even like educating a child, raising a child, modeling for a child how to walk in the world. Like, I think as many people as possible that a kid can feel attached to and safe with, the better.
I think maybe that's why I have such reservations around thinking about like children, but also just like definitive parts about my future is mm-hmm. that I know that I've had to like rework the images that I have of what that would look like.
Mm-hmm.
So to like prescribe something to myself now, after already kind of wiping away society's expectations of me and what my life will look like, feels weird. And I also have always felt like I'm happy to, like, be a mother to many and, like, to be, like, caring and caregiving in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, more. And I really, like, I appreciate you using the term futures.
Yeah.
Because I think back to my paper, but also just, like, in the...
Sorry, back to me.
Sorry. And love that for you. Back to me. But I think like, yeah, projections of what a queer future, whether that's living in a bush.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I'm working on it. You just need to, like, send me to, like, Yellowknife or something and just like pop me there for a few months.
Literally said you hate the cold. Like, I you're like, you know what, we're gonna start off this journey and you're gonna sell it to me by putting me in an environment that I actually loathe. Like, who are you right now?
Listen, either I'll die,
okay, cool,
and then we won't have to worry about it, or I somehow miraculously survive, become a, like, crazy bush woman with,
wow,
like, many skills. Also, I'm picturing, like, a ripped bod.
Yes. Just chopping wood, like, effortlessly. Just,
hours.
Like, going.
One hand.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm kind of sold.
Great.
Yeah. Great. I'm back in. What was I talking about? Queer futures?
Mm-hmm. I think something that we talk about a lot in queer futures and also like what we're talking about in a general sense is like going back to the, like the theory of relationality. And I feel like relationality, I kind of like right now when I'm thinking about it, and it's also a way to think about my identity and how you are just in relation constantly with everything around you, and that affect is more kind of your central focus instead of like who you are. It's kind of like what you bring and what like feelings you bring and who you're in relation with or where.
I should start to look at my life this way. I need to, how am I relating right now? What am I bringing?
We're in relation right now.
True.
Yes.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa. Relational, baby.
Yes.
Yeah. Kids. Relationality. What does relation? I know this is a. If the in between is a huge theme for me.
Yes.
Relationality is a huge theme for Tiana.
Ooh. Yes. We love. Anyways, to get into my co-star as an Aquarius. Ooh. Yeah.
What are you?
I'm an Aries.
Okay.
Big Aries vibes.
Huge Aries.
Huge. What about you?
Virgo.
Okay. Oh. All right. It makes sense. Everything makes sense now. So I find that I'm often like I find meaning in my relationships of self. In my relationships,
okay.
Which I'm working on being alone. Like, y'all are just like, be alone, figure this out. And I'm like, I'm figuring it out with people.
That's fair, though.
Yeah, yeah. So, currently, I'm in 2 partnerships. Mm-hmm. Mm. And one of them is a long-term partnership I've been in for 6 years.
Wow.
Almost 6 years. With a white person. Interesting. And
blinks heavily.
Yes, I mean, like, we're talking identity and formation of self.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm thinking about like being in contrast to whiteness, that's a very, very intimate space to be in. And then my other partnership is with a Mohawk woman.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah.
Deadly.
Yeah. Deadly. She is the embodiment of deadly for sure. So I was just telling Sage a story prior to this, and this relationship is new, so we just recently were like, I love you, it was so cute, but she actually said it to me in Anishinaabe Mo'en.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's big.
That's different.
That's real love.
Different. Decolonial love, for sure. Uh-huh. And it actually took me a few days to, like, process what that even, like, what if that happened? What was that? And I felt that was, like, a great moment to interrogate self, because I also was wondering, like, when, if we're talking about ancestors and we're talking about healing,
mm-hmm.
when that was, like, actually said last within my family with that like same kind of feeling of like, yeah, because it was such a big moment.
And would it have been between two women as well?
Exactly, right? We're healing
that decolonial queer love.
Yes. Ooh. Relationality,
big moves.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Thank you. It was
we're
great.
So happy for you.
Oh,
right?
Thank you.
Aspire. I feel like we have a lot to learn from each other.
We do.
Yeah. I feel like I've already learned a lot from you ladies tonight.
Thank you.
Relationality.
We're in relationality right now.
Being alone, Tiana.
Right? Maybe it's all about that balance.
We're going to work on that. Mm-hmm. We'll be in the alone, in the bush. You're in limbo. You're in limbo with us. You're going to come.
I'll be in limbo in the bush.
We'll send you off to have a long time cutting.
Oh my God.
Cutting wood.
Honestly, I'm down for the physical labor.
Okay, cool.
Of cutting wood.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll go with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys want to go camping?
Yeah. There's baby steps.
Yeah. Honestly, with Corona, like, sweeping the nation, I feel like we should just pop
Let's
up.
Let's go camp.
I feel like we could thrive there.
Yeah.
We'll get a group of us. We'll be communal living. We'll get it, like, yeah, there we go. We're
Let's
living
go. We'll
our
practice for
futurisms now. Whoa. In the present.
We're selling it.
Yeah.
All right. I'm on board.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Oh, well, we still have a few more minutes. I was, like, trying to wrap everything up. Well, I just want to say thank you to both of you for being here. I feel like this is one of my favorite conversations to have, but I don't often get to have it, at, and especially not with two wonderful, intelligent, and beautiful, you can't tell, but I can, wow. Women. Yeah, so wow. Thank you so much. Okay. Whoa, sorry.
Also, stage is really great, too. So, like. Also, sorry, very beautiful.
Aboriginal excellence.
Indigenous brilliance right here, TM.
2012 award winner. It's real. That trauma she hits. Yeah, but thank you so much for both being here. Thank you for coming back, Carmela. I basically forced you, but thank you for being a willing participant. And we look forward to more episodes. Hopefully you'll come back. And also, please hit us up with the links for your film when it's up, if we can go screen.
Yeah.
We're so ready to jump on that. Mm-hmm. I'll let y'all know when my paper gets published.
Please do. Also, I'll, like, proofread it.
Oh, well, please. Okay, yeah, maybe that's a little
too. Okay. Doc sesh.
Word, yeah.
Yeah.
Google Doc. All right. Well, thank you both for coming here tonight. Thank you for listening. And as always, have a great rest of your night.
Wash your hands.
And wash your
properly. Properly. Count. Sing a song.
Yeah.
You know.
Use soap. Lather.
Like, warm water, preferably.
Be a responsible adult.
Word. All right, here's the Unforgotten. Huh?